Hello everybody and welcome to tonight's Infant and Child Mental Health presentation being brought to you in partnership between Emerging Minds and MHPN. And welcome to all of you out there who are watching this tonight live on our webinar, and also to the viewers who are watching us via the podcast. Welcome, and we're really excited to be bringing you this second webinar in our 6 webinar series. And this is a very topical webinar at the moment, lots of research and practice around this, which is engaging with parents and infants in the first 1,000 days of a child's life from conception to 2 years of age. Welcome also to the 815 people who are online now, and that number we're sure will grow as the evening progresses. It's great to have so many of you who are interested in our content and who are joining us tonight, so thank you. Emerging Minds would and PHN would like to firstly acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land across Australia upon which our webinar presenters and participants are located. We wish to pay respect to the elders past, present and future for the memories, the traditions, the culture and hopes of Indigenous Australia. So hi everybody, my name's Dan Moss and I'll be your facilitator tonight, and we've got 3 wonderful presenters who I will get to in a second. So my background is from a number of different government and non-government organisations over about a 20-year period. And for the last 8 months, I've been really lucky to be the Workforce Development Manager at Emerging Minds. And we bring to practitioners working with the issues of first 1,000 days and disadvantage a real lens of working with children with early intervention and prevention scope for children's mental health. So just before I start, a bit of a self-care message. So we at MHPN at Emerging Minds would just like to note that many people have had different difficult interactions with service providers, and that they may have been different to some of the best practice which we hope to bring you tonight. So the purpose of this webinar really is to give a broader group of health professionals the skills that they need so that they can become most effective in their future provision of service to children and their parents. Tonight we do have a chat box available to all of you. Now just please note that there is a sign on the chat box which says the chat box is unavailable tonight. That is not the case. We have 53 people at the moment in the chat room, and we'd really like as many of you to join us tonight as possible. So please ignore that message when you first go into the chat box. The chat box, we'd just like to point out, is not a forum for personal stories though. It is designed to complement the panel discussion by allowing professionals to share resources and their experiences of practice. So thank you for respecting this. If any of tonight's content does cause you distress, please seek care, and if you're required, by ringing Lifeline on 131114 or if necessarily dialing 000. You can call Beyond Blue on 1300 224636, or contact your GP or local mental health service. So a few words around our exciting webinar series that we have for you this year. As I mentioned, this is the second in our 6 webinar series in conjunction with MHPN and Emerging Minds. And please register for the upcoming webinar on Monday the 15th of October, which is Engaging Parents with School-Aged Children. And on Wednesday the 7th of November, we have a webinar on Engaging Parents with Children Approaching Adolescence. After that, in this calendar year, in this financial year, we'll also talk about supporting children's mental health after trauma and engaging children and parents with complex needs through a systems approach. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce tonight's panel. I believe that you have the panel bios were disseminated earlier for those of you who registered. So first of all, I'd like to warmly welcome our first speaker tonight, social worker and Executive General Manager at Relationships Australia, Mr. Jonathan Main. So Jonathan, welcome. I've been lucky enough to kind of work with you for, well, going back a while now, but what I'd really like to know is, I know that Relationships Australia have been involved in the establishment of a children and family assessment and referral network for children 0 to 2 in the western suburbs. Can you tell us a little bit about your involvement in that?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Dan, and welcome everyone. The CFARNs, or Child and Family Assessment and Referral Networks, was a recommendation that came out of the Royal Commission into our Child Protection Systems, which concluded in 2016. And one of the recommendations across a broad range of recommendations made by Commissioner Nyland was identifying a need for a local entry point for services focusing on collaborative practice and coordinated multi-service responses. So that's what we've been set up to do, and we do that primarily with a bunch of core partners, and they are particularly our statutory child protection services, which in South Australia is Department for Child Protection, our statewide maternal and child health services, providing universal and targeted services, which is Child and Family Health Service, the Department of Early Education, Department of Education, which provides early years children's centres and early childhood learning centres, as well as local birthing hospitals. So that's our core partners, and then of course we work with a local group, a local partnership group of government and non-government providers who are in the family support space.
Great, thank you, Jonathan. The next panellist for tonight I'd like to welcome is Mandy Saifang. Mandy Saifang is a occupational therapist and an infant child mental health therapist. So Mandy, what I'd like to know about you to start with is what is the work of an infant and child mental health therapist?
Hi Dan, and hi to everybody. Look, infant mental health for me is a passion area, and I did postgraduate studies in that area, and really it's about focusing on supporting parents and their infants in the first 1,000 days, so in the antenatal period and the postnatal period up till the child is around 2. And it's really about supporting the parent and the child to have those positive outcomes. I think in the past we didn't understand that infants have their own mental health, and they're on the continuum of ill health to health and wellbeing. And so it's a really important area for us to be focusing on.
Right. Thank you, Mandy. Our next panellist, those of you who joined us for our last chat would remember Dr. Nick Kalinenko, psychiatrist. And Nick, I know that you've done a lot of your work has been around working with children and parents where children are in their first 1,000 days. Why is that such an important piece of work for you?
Well, hi Dan, and hi everyone. Because it really sets the foundation for the beginning of life. It sets the foundation, you know, for a kind of trajectory of children's development, particularly emotionally and socially. And it really sets the foundation for a rock solid relationship between parents and their young children that they have a chance of then to take forward throughout the whole of the family's development and their kids' development. So it seems a critical time to get things underway, and it seems a critical time for the best start in life.
Great. Thank you, Nick. Really looking forward to all of those three presentations tonight. Before we start, just an introduction again to tonight's webinar platform. I noticed that we now have 163 people on our chat room, so that's great that people aren't being put off by that initial message. We also have 933 people who are now online, so that's fantastic. Hoping to push the 1,000 number tonight, so that's great. So just to mention that if you do have technical issues tonight, there's a technical support FAQs tab for your help with technical issues. There is also a number to call if you are still having difficulty. And just before we go on, I'd encourage all participants tonight, if you'd please provide feedback at the webinar's conclusion by completing the feedback survey, which is loaded underneath the survey tab at the top of the screen. And as we touched on before, just some ground rules. Please be respectful of other participants and panellists in the chat room. And again, that number for you, if you do need any technical support, 1-800-291-863. If there is a significant issue that affects all participants, of course, an announcement will be made. So what do we want to learn from tonight? So the learning outcomes for tonight are really what we're hoping is that through an exploration of contemporary research around infant mental health and how this translates to positive and proactive practice with both infants and parents, participants will identify early intervention and prevention opportunities and work with parents, outline strategies to engage parents respectfully and collaboratively, and outline common practice challenges professionals for working with infants and their families. So, I'd now like to throw over to Mr. Jonathan Main, social worker and executive manager at Relationships Australia. Jonathan.
Thanks, Dan. So, look, I thought I'd just start by, as you can see from this first slide, starting with some of the key themes from the research evidence. It's interesting that having been around for a while, we've been talking for many years around the importance of the early years. And our focus on the early years has primarily been around the ages of 3 to 5 and, you know, with notions of school readiness and what are the precursor conditions that give children the best chance of starting school. But in fact, the focus on the first 1,000 days has really highlights the evolving and more recent evidence that's emerged in neuroscience and the full extent of early developmental plasticity. And as Nick was alluding to earlier, that clearly forms the basis of better outcomes and trajectory through the life course. So there is an excellent publication that people might already have seen from Murdoch Children's Research Institute by Tim Moore and colleagues that really highlights that some of the earlier stages of development do commence in the antenatal period, and that the first 1,000 days is in fact the period of maximum developmental plasticity, and hence provides the greatest potential to affect health and wellbeing over the life course. I also want to pay a little bit of attention to some locally generated research by the Adelaide University Better Start Child Health and Development Research Group, John Lynch and colleagues. In a research paper last year, they highlighted that 1 in 4 children born each year in South Australia are subject to a child protection notification by the age of 10. And almost half of these notifications occur by the age of 3. So you can see a direct coincidence of the importance of the early years and having prevention, early intervention responses in this space. They also noted that escalating levels of involvement in the child protection system is associated with increasing prevalence of social and economic disadvantage. And this clearly points to broader social determinants of health and intergenerational disadvantage and how that impacts on child health and parenting outcomes. Importantly, mother's physical and psychosocial wellbeing and that of baby in pregnancy are important aspects of maternal wellbeing, which can also provide indicators to potential barriers in effective parenting, as for example is illustrated in how mother's mental health in pregnancy can be a predictive factor of postnatal depression. And finally, they point to the importance of service systems needing to recognise and respond to barriers faced by parents and carers as we look to support families. So using that as a basis and then looking at engagement strategies, one of the things that I think is really important is that we are sure that we've got engagement strategies with Hayley and Lewis, and that's both individually and together. That means joining with them where they're at in terms of their lives and what's happening for them at this current time. For us, within our organisation, there's a number of organisations around the country that use a universal holistic screening tool, which is the Family Doors or Detection of Overall Risk Screen, which is a standardised self-report screening tool which covers a comprehensive range of domains, which is really important for engaging people and assessing and getting them to identify what are the things that are most important for them. An important aspect of that is how we clarify and make clear to Hayley and Lewis what our service role is, in fact what our practitioner roles are, so that they're clear about how we can assist them, what our service approach is, but also covering off on important issues such as confidentiality and mandatory obligations. Following the information we derive from the DOOR screening tool, practitioner assessment of risk and protective factors is the next critical element in understanding Haley and Lewis's broader social and family context. And developing a clear, really clinical picture from this evidence is essential for ensuring that they get the support that they need. And so some of the key areas that I can see within the initial information that we've received is in relation to, you know, Hayley's pregnancy and her progress through that pregnancy, the history of depression and self-harm for her, the multifaceted nature of the complex relationships at home and care of her brothers, of course Lewis's drug use and drug dealing, arguments over money, as well as their aspirations to live independently. So early work in effectively engaging with their concerns and their aspirations is going to help us in identifying the support network that's needed to help them provide the best environment for themselves and for baby. And then finally, flexible service responses is a critical thing, particularly for families with multiple and complex needs, whether that means being prepared to be able to do home visiting or assist with facilitating key support such as antenatal clinic visits and the like is an important aspect of how we are able to demonstrate our amenability to engage with Hayley and Lewis. If we then look at building partnerships, obviously what I've just described is the starting point for building partnerships. But for us from a service and broader organisational perspective, restorative approach to our practice is a really important basis for how we go about our work. That's really drawing on the idea that we're engaging with them, in fact with other support agencies, in high challenge and high support conversations, having difficult conversations but in a gentle way in order to really help them through the issues that they're confronting. Ultimately, the aim of that is to assist Hayley and Lewis by doing with them, not to or for them, or alternatively, as happens sometimes, not doing anything at all. So case planning and coordinated case management based on DOOR screening and our risk assessment is with Hayley and Lewis being central to this process to ensure that we do have a shared case plan and a support network of the services is really essential to building effective partnerships. It's also important that the range of supports are tailored to Hayley and Lewis's needs and that occurs in a sequenced way that ensures the priorities for care are met and they're not overwhelmed with either a scattershot service system response or no response at all. And finally, engaging a support network in terms of a broader cultural community as well as service networks is particularly important for families who have multiple and complex needs. In terms of dealing with challenges, certainly from Hayley and Lewis's perspective, there's a number of elements in terms of their past experience. Their reluctance to engage or indeed their potential to disengage, their past experience related to services they have received, and in Hayley's case we've got a number of examples where she's had really a poor service experience and that would influence her willingness to engage and how we see that as a challenge to respond to. Cultural barriers, particularly for families that come from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander backgrounds or culturally and linguistically diverse families, but also recognising that people who might have had an out-of-home care experience themselves where they have an increased risk of child protection notifications and child removal is another thing we need to be looking out for. Complexity of comorbidity factors is important, and obviously in Hayley and Lewis's case we've got some here in relation to mental health issues and substance misuse, and these need to be managed so that Hayley and Lewis don't feel overwhelmed with service demands or otherwise poorly sequenced support. And then finally, I think this issue here about dealing with the challenges of agency threshold, sometimes we can find that we're working against each other rather than working with each other. Sometimes that can be because we don't necessarily have a common case plan. It might be around referral criteria and thresholds, and these are challenges we need to face. And then finally, in terms of an overview about an engagement with Hayley and Lewis, just to focus on these four areas of collaborative practice. Working in partnership with Hayley and Lewis means ensuring that their focus on the needs of baby, as well as their own needs, is a really important thing that we need to be able to do. The importance of sharing clinical information and having a holistic case plan, where support is both coherent but also well coordinated, and also effective partnership with support agencies. And this requires having a shared case plan, ensuring that that coherent engagement of support is there. And then finally, helping negotiate complex systems. And for particularly in Hayley and Lewis's case, a lot of these systems are by their nature complex, they're unfamiliar. And so for her, just even assisting in navigating antenatal birthing hospital issues, getting support in relation to mental health, drug and alcohol support in relation to Lewis, as well as housing and financial services, just some of the areas that we think need some initial focus. So for us, that's kind of an overview about how we would approach working with these kinds of issues in a family like Hayley and Lewis.
Thank you very much for that, Jonathan. Really appreciated the Relationships Australia and South Australia perspective, and particularly that conversation around family doors, which we might get back to in the question and answer session. Okay, so our next presenter is Mandy Safan. So Mandy, welcome again to our webinar conversation tonight. And you're going to be speaking particularly from an occupational therapist and an infant mental health perspective. So welcome, Mandy.
Thanks again, Dan. Yes, I think a key concept when I think about engaging with Hayley in the first 1,000 days of her infant's life is really understanding sort of arousal and emotional regulation. To me, this is a really key idea. And as you can see, it's a dyadic process, which means that it's really important to focus on the infant and their arousal levels and ability to regulate, but also on the parent's capacity to regulate themselves. Because one affects the other. And so really important that we start thinking about these kinds of issues as we're working with Hayley and with Lewis as we they're preparing for their baby's arrival. Okay. So as you can see, this is a busy slide, sorry about that, but I think it's a great slide because it sort of gets us thinking about how this regulation between parent and infant can spin into what I think of as angel circles, which is at the top there, or can spin into vicious cycles. So if we look at angel circles, you see this is where the infant and the parent are able to sort of co-regulate, so together be able to regulate their sort of arousal and emotional levels so that both are getting a sense of increasing confidence and security in the relationship, being able to support them to be in this just right space. As I said, it can spin into these vicious cycles, and this is not such a helpful thing, particularly if this is a repeated experience, where the infant and the parent start spinning into dysregulation and both get the sense of increasing the stress in the relationship, and not getting that sense of security and sort of confidence that the relationship can actually help the infant feel settled. As you can see in the white box around the angel circles and vicious cycles, there are the things that can kind of impact the capacity, and I've highlighted in red for the Hayley Lewis story around what might be the things that could impact whether or not we're spinning into co-regulation or dysregulation. And so we know in the story of Hayley and Lewis that already there are anxieties in the pregnancy for Hayley, and she's in the presence in this prenatal space of sort of domestic violence or aggression between her mum and her partner. We also know she's anxious about her brothers and the way in which that they're being parented. And she's also gaining sort of anxieties about what it's going to be like for herself to become a mother. We know too that a little bit about her background, that it's likely that in early childhood she herself experienced some level of abuse or trauma and neglect, and that she's had her own mental health struggles, that she's in the past experienced depression, and it's likely we get the sense with the story of her self-harming that she's had difficulties with emotional regulation. So this is all these things start putting together the picture that it potentially might be difficult around regulating. We also know that when we look down at her partnership with Lewis, that there's some strains there, and that her family system, that there's conflict there with her mother. And you don't get a sense that there is a big social network around this young woman. And then anyone who does potentially come into that system, there could be the potential for trust issues, given the mum's prediction that harm comes when you actually let people in. So where does this bring us? It really brings us to thinking about how for Hayley, her experience of her past experience of being cared for is likely to impact her experience of becoming a mother. And so what does that mean for us as therapists working with Hayley and Lewis and this family unit? To me, it really is about trying to support Hayley particularly and Lewis to experience emotional safety so that we actually can get some shared dialogue going. And that's not necessarily going to be an easy thing given that sort of backdrop. And so a real focus on how am I going to, as a worker, create emotional safety, I think becomes incredibly important. And so when I start thinking about that, I think your approach as a worker is incredibly important and really crucial. And that's really a lot of the work that you need to be focusing on. So I've put here a couple of my sort of all-time favourites of thinking about that. So you've got John Bowlby here, who's, you know, one of the early pioneers in attachment work, describing how the greatest protection for a baby is to be held in the mind and heart of a sensitively attuned other. And when you think about that, I think about parents with children, but I think about Tim Moore and how he describes the cascade of parallel processes, which means that me as a worker, it's so important for me to be thinking about how I can have a thinking mind, how I can have an empathetic heart, and how I can be sensitively attuned to the other, the parent and the infant, when I'm actually meeting with them. Because the hope is that if we are able to give that to families, then they actually build their capacity for them to be able to give that to their infants. And all of that to me is working in what Dan Siegel's, he's coined the term the window of tolerance. This working within the window of tolerance is really important. And that requires us to actually be really sensitive to those arousal cues that I was talking about earlier. What are those dysregulation signs that I might be pushing someone out of their window of tolerance and towards that kind of withdrawing or going into attack mode, which we don't want people to be moving into those zones. And so what skills do I use if I notice that someone is moving outside of that safety? I think Dan Hughes's work is fantastic in this area of thinking about the PACE acronym. So how am I going to use playfulness, acceptance, curiosity and empathy to actually sort of keep that zone of safety, to build a sense of security there in my relationship with this young woman and her partner. And then in all of that, the work of thinking about Patricia O'Rourke's sort of paper that she wrote about reflective supervision and just how important it is that as workers we're actually engaged in a reflective process. Really important for people that when we're working with very vulnerable infants and their traumatised parents often, we need to have a place where we can process and think through our moment-by-moment interactions with families and process some of those quite intense experiences that we're going to have. And for me, it really is about thinking about how we can provide that best level of support. And really that idea of, that no one goes home with terror in their heart when they're working with very vulnerable infants and their parents, and that we can really do the best by them of building this safe, secure relationship that can have a big impact. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mandy, and lots of really great questions also coming in from the chat room. And lots of kind of energy about that presentation. So thank you very much. That's wonderful.
Thanks.
I'll now hand over to our third and final presentation for tonight. For a psychiatrist perspective, Mr. Nick Kowalenko.
Hello, Dan, and hello, everyone. Look, I'll take more the kind of the practitioner's approach to start off with. And as a psychiatrist, I study that in two ways. One is obviously by talking to people directly, but the other way sometimes is to be a consultant to a team, where team members in a multidisciplinary team will bring me clients they're concerned about or worried about, or hoping I can add some clarity in joining with them in interviewing them and perhaps discussing some potential psychiatric issues. But look, as a practitioner meeting with Hayley, and you both got her story, the case summary, and in a sense you may have had a chance to have a look at that brief video of her talking to Lewis. What the first thing I want to do is kind of reset the frame. What I mean by that, Hayley's big issue in one sense is that she doubts she has what it takes to make it. So that's the kind of concern I'm trying to think about. What's the way of trying to demonstrate to her she might have more agency or more strength in this whole process? The first thing that strikes me is I'm having a chance to talk to her perhaps when she's as early as 12 weeks pregnant. She's choosing to be a mum right then, because she could make other choices, but she's chosen to go ahead and be a mum, and I want to make that clear to her that she's made a very clear-cut choice. And that's the point, in a sense, of that first question or inquiry. And that she started planning from the video, she's a practical woman with a real problem-solving capacity, so I want to highlight that in a sense as a strength for her. And you can see there that even though she has a lot of complexity in her life, there is a risk that when things get really tough, she might want to hide. So that's about me, in a way, just wanting to be more understanding about the situation that she's in. And you can see some of the other questions there that Mandy, for example, has raised. Knowing who to trust is risky for her for the various reasons that are partly revealed to us. And there's the thing that she talks about herself. What, in fact, is the kind of life her child deserves? And can she tell me about that as a kind of future-oriented statement? And you can see there that if we move on, which we'll do in a second, in terms of engaging and collaborating respectively, just some questions about Hayley's social circumstances, but also citing that in the sense about herself and Lewis as a pair. And then the question for her, who can she actually trust with her thoughts and fears about her own baby? But also the fact that she is a mum now. She's a mum to her brothers. How does she be a mum? What's it like being a mum? She's actually got quite a lot of skill and experience in being a mum. That question about neglect might be, well, a bit blunt, and you might have a better way of framing that question. It's, unless she tolerates it, so you don't really know until you've asked and see how she responds. I'm interested in her friends. Does she have some friends that can support her? Who's around her? And those last two questions are really about professionals and interactions with professionals. And how would you know when a professional could be trusted, Hayley? Again, this is about talking to Hayley and Lewis, more specifically about the baby. And these are kind of more like infant health oriented questions. So you can have a look at them there. What would you want your baby to say was the best thing about being parented by you and Lewis? So that's a kind of pretty open question. Then in her network of important relationships that she's struggling with at the moment, with Lewis, Frank, brothers, friends, mum, what will be the impact of those relationships on your caring for your baby? What about, will it have a different impact at potentially different ages or different stages? So these are kind of forward-looking questions. And what had the biggest influence on your mum's parenting of you? Might be a good question to ask her, and about if there are any repetitions of that in her own life or in the first couple of years that she thinks might be the shape of her infant's life. How would your baby let you know you're a better mum? Let's pretend your baby could let you and Lewis know what she or he most wanted from you now, in several months' time, or in the first few years of their life. They're the kind of questions which are a bit more exploratory and allow some space for Hayley to talk about her hopes and futures, but also how they're kind of linked and how they sit in the nest of all her other key relationships. I think a number of both Jonathan and Mandy have talked about some of these issues. There's a real significance and importance of establishing an engaged relationship with Hayley and Lewis, and then sort of exploring with them about how wide that engagement might want to extend, and that should be partly shaped in a way that's determined by Hayley and also Lewis. The hard issues are trying to assess the impact of these things. Is the hopelessness that Hayley's experiencing one about just being stuck in a dilemma about who comes first, my baby, my relationship with Lewis, mum, family, brothers. There's a whole lot of things she's struggling with, and the baby's changing all that and driving change in how she negotiates her relationships. Does she have the hopelessness of depression, hopelessness that can derive from neglect or from role reversal in looking after her brothers? Or is it the sort of hopelessness of being a bit stuck while she has to work things out and move through an adjustment to adjusting to having a baby? Or is it related to drug use, and has she had any drug use? And if she does, what's the potential impact on the unborn infant? There is a history of self-harm and depression, and that does slightly increase the risk of a recurrence at some point during her pregnancy or postnatally. And so thinking about that and perhaps talking about that, exploring it further with her. There's the issue she's raised about the risk of seeking help. It's risky to think about seeking help because it might reveal that she's an inadequate or unfit mum. That's an issue worth discussing with her, about trying to explore her fears and concerns about that and what would set up a trusting relationship. She's told you that when things get tough, she might go missing. So that's also an important thing to raise, in a sense of a relationship with her and being involved with her over time, about how would she go missing, how is it likely to happen, what might it look like, are there warning signs, all those sorts of questions. And I think for a clinician, there's the kind of difficulty sometimes of tolerating the history of disappointment with professionals like us. So, interventions for the first 1,000 days, and sometimes even a bit longer. Really, this is predominantly, at least in my service setting, a sort of community nursing setting predominantly, with child and family health nurses, or they're called slightly different things in different states around the country, and the importance that Jonathan raised, for example, about care coordination. She needs to be linked positively and consistently and in a sustained way to routine antenatal care to maximise her care. And a good discussion about whether for her it's best if that's midwife-led. In some settings, it's GP-led antenatal care. So how that should work, as long as it's consistent. Engaging Lewis is a critical issue. And often, even though Hayley has some doubts about Lewis's capacity, often even if relationships come apart, it tends to happen more after the second or third year. So one could expect that Lewis might be around for some significant time, and if you look at that video, it looks like he might be. But he could be encouraged, joined, supported through SMS for Dads, which is readily available at no cost, and sort of fathers groups, especially short duration ones, like 3 or 4 sessions soon after birth, quite helpful for engaging young dads. And in my state, as I imagine, New South Wales, sustained home visiting might be accessible to this young woman. And the important part of that is sustained home visiting over a longer period of time, where the aspects of her own child, of her child and her child's development could be highlighted, preparation through pregnancy, parent-infant interaction, and a whole lot of other services can kind of be coordinated and managed through a care coordinator who's a home visitor. And being with peers who also, young parents with kids, can be very helpful and sustain a link, especially socially, for mums like Hayley. And you can see some other things there, including support for Hayley's education and vocation, and perhaps also for Lewis. So that's really what I wanted to say, and I'm happy to have a conversation and take questions on any of those issues, and I'm looking forward to that.
Thanks very much, Nick. And again, hello to all our audience members now out there. We've now cracked the magic 1,000 number and at 1,041, and 230 of you are in the chat room. Nick, while you were speaking, I was looking at the chat room, and there was a lot of conversation around this kind of balance between being forthright with mothers during their pregnancy or during the early years of their child's life, but also not wanting to be too aggressive or to put them off. I was just wondering, how do you kind of strike that balance in your role as a psychiatrist? I think we might have just lost down there for Nick.
Hey, I think I'm back. Sorry, is that okay, Dan?
Oh, sorry, Nick. Yep.
Yes, can I take that question again? Sorry, everyone.
Thanks, sir. Yes. Yeah.
So the question was about the balance between the sort of importance about engaging softly, but there are also some hard issues that have to be addressed. And potential drug use would be a good one, because the unborn infant doesn't have much time in which issues of drug use should be addressed if mum's using drugs, and need to be discussed pretty early on in the piece. But there are some drivers for why you can excuse your boldness, if that's what you need to do, in asking about these questions and being fairly direct. And that's that any parent wants to be the best parent that they can possibly be, and they are most worried about their infant's welfare and well-being, and they don't want to jeopardise their own child's development. So that's the angle at which you come from. I think it's from the what's important for their child's development and what's best for their development. And for most parents, even those that are struggling with a lot of difficulties, there's a sense that this is a moment of hope for their infant, and a moment of hope for them where things can be different. So, for example, with a really tough issues like, you know, drug addiction or drug dependence or intermittent drug use, it's a time when parents say, uh-oh, this really is a kind of, this is a moment where I have to make my mind up. It's a moment where I have to do something different. So they're the points you want to get to, and I think what you've got from Hayley in that story there, you've got a lot of things going on. You've got, she wants to be the best parent she can be. She's a bit worried she doesn't have what it might take to make it. So you've got this balance of things going on all the whole time. And the other specific thing you've got in terms of the background is a risk of depression for her. And she's at higher risk of a recurrence of depression during pregnancy and postnatally. So you want to talk to her about that, about what are the kind of early warning signs, what, you know, we use a term like relapse prevention plan. What are the kind of early warnings? How can we prevent that? What are the health promotion activities she can maintain to ensure her emotional health is as good as it can be?
Great. Thanks for Nick. That, Nick, a really great answer to a question which confounds many of us in practice. The next question is for Mandy. Mandy, there's been lots of similar questions for you regarding your practice. But much of it is around perhaps a similar question to that of Nick's, but a little bit more along the lines of engaging where a mum in particular is quite reluctant to be in a service or to be engaging with specialist services. How do you kind of get around that or engage in that situation?
Yeah, well, it's very tricky, isn't it, of if you've got a young person who doesn't want to be there and is looking to exit quickly, how do you kind of get that relationship going quite quickly? And, I mean, I think Nick talked about it before. I think you've got a great opportunity here with Hayley because she clearly wants to do it differently than what she's experienced parenting. And I think that's a really exciting opportunity to sort of say to her that you're there to kind of help her in that new journey and that new pathway that she's trying to sort of carve out that's going to be different from what she's experienced. I kind of think of that building the relationship as being a bit like a dance, and sometimes you are going to tread on toes, hopefully not too often, and then the apologies and the kind of trying to get that sort of rhythm going so that you are in sync with them in some ways. It's almost like you are sort of constructing a musical score together and kind of getting some rhythm and reciprocity going. And so that's why I think as a worker, it's just so important to, you know, get yourself really present and really switched on in the moment and kind of have yourself very able to read the cues of if the person is beginning to withdraw, that you kind of bring in something that maybe makes it a lighter moment because maybe it was too much. I mean, sometimes too, it can be really useful to be quite transparent. I think I might have trodden on your toes there, and my good intentions, you wouldn't use that language, but you're trying to convey your intention is to really support Hayley in what she's describing as doing it differently for her new baby that's on the way. So, yeah, I think it is reading those cues. It's interesting thinking about reading the cues. You see I'm wearing a scarf tonight. I think you can get a lot of cues from the body signals, and I'd be really watching Hayley closely and Lewis closely, particularly around the neck area, because it's a really key area that gives away a lot of stress cues. And so as you're talking to Hayley, she might be saying, oh, it's a perfectly fine conversation, but you'd be watching to see if the body actually is giving you other clues that you're actually overstepping the mark with her, and you need to back off and go slower in terms of the red flush or the breathing rate or those sort of bodily cues. They really are giveaway signs often, hence wearing a scarf so you don't get to see that I'm feeling stressed on this webinar. No, I'm fine.
Very good tactic, Mandy. I might try that next time. Lots of questions for you, Jonathan, during your discussion around just what is this this Family Doors screening tool that Relationship Australia uses, and how would a screening tool like that help someone like Hayley, do you think?
Okay, so Family Doors is a tool that was commissioned by the federal government and was developed by Relationships Australia, South Australia, but also with Professor Jennifer McIntosh from Deakin University, initially in the family law environment, but has since been then modified and extended for the broader range of programs that we provide. The importance of it is that it is a holistic risk screening tool, so it enables clients self-report and clients to identify the issues themselves as they see them. And it covers a broad range of domains from mental health and drugs and alcohol issues to stress, parenting stress, relationship issues, and really enables us to engage with where Hayley and Lewis are at this point. In ways that they identify as being most important to them. It also means, though, that there are times when what people don't answer in the screening or risk assessment process is a pointer to what we might need to talk about. It is, I think, as Nick and Mandy have pointed out, you know, it's also an opportunity for us to engage with you know, what their hopes and aspirations are. What their sense of the future is, you know, with baby arriving. But it's also that by using a universal holistic tool like this, we're communicating a message that these are things that we're aware are happening within your life. These are things that we're aware and that we're wanting to talk about. That we ask these questions of everyone, so we're not just targeting particular questions at you because of particular things that we've heard or that others have told us about you. So where they decline to talk about risks or identify particular risks, and that might be due in particularly with the sort of counsel that Hayley's mum has been giving her, it might be for fear of heavy-handed interventions by other agencies, which may be a deterrent for Hayley, but for us it's an opportunity to talk with her about that.
Great. Thank you, Jonathan. And very helpfully, Dr. Jamie Lee has joined in our chat room and reminded people that the app is available free regarding Family Doors on the website, and that is www.familydoors.com. So thank you for that, Jamie. Nick, I might throw to you now. There's been quite a few questions now in the chat room regarding engaging dads, and you kind of touched on the importance within the scenario of engaging Lewis. How might you do that within the context that Lewis might be feeling disengaged from service or service resistant? How, what kind of techniques or strategies might you have to engage Lewis?
Look, two or three possibilities with Lewis. One, I don't know if you saw the video with Hayley, he's not as disengaged as many other dads. So one is to sort of broker his engagement a bit through Hayley potentially, and that you saw how she sort of solves problems with him pretty actively. And so that's one approach, and that's partly why my questions are directed about what's, you know, the best thing about pregnancy for you, for Lewis, for, you know, all those sorts of things. And putting Lewis inside the frame, so I get Hayley telling me about Lewis with a view to, I guess, heading towards Hayley, wouldn't it, well, let's, what about getting Lewis in, and wouldn't it be good if I could talk to him as well, if that's kind of the, you know, the relevant direction that we're going. So that's certainly one way. Sometimes when you do it, I guess, more typically with older kids, is that, you know, kids, even with parents are separated, you do say things about it'd be important that for, it might be important in the interest of your infant, you know, your unborn infant, to get a view about these sorts of things from Lewis. What do you think about that? So I'm putting Hayley, I guess, there as the gatekeeper in a sense, but I guess leaving open the possibility, because I have, there's also a wide kind of web about how much should I involve a mum, how much should I involve this discussion about a grandmother. There's a whole lot of other people about saying, as long as you say to Hayley, would it help if I met with them just the once to get an idea? So sometimes that's a way of starting off a conversation and including them, depending on what Hayley can kind of manage. It's partly what Mandy, I guess, was saying about what's the window of tolerance. But it's likely that they are, at least for a time, going to be an active couple in this infant's life and through these sort of several months of, you know, the baby's development. So I think it's an opportunity to talk about how much, how much is Lewis enjoying it now? Because she's not saying, she's predicting that Lewis may become a difficulty, but she's actually not saying he's much of a problem now in some ways. So I think he's got some things going for him. Then I think there are some very specific points. There are some points after the birth when sometimes in the frame of home visiting or on the frame of a kind of way of doing things, even the way Jonathan's talking about outdoors, sometimes we have services where there are regular postnatal meetings for all dads. So you invite Lewis. You want to do things about inviting him in. SMS for dads is a really great low-key way of potentially engaging dads because they get a message on their phone. It's about things about their unborn child. It might be things about their partner. It might be things about their social network and how they can help and assist. And most dads find that incredibly rewarding and it doesn't have the demands of a kind of face-to-face chat.
Yeah, thank you for that. Really great answer. The next question is indicative of lots of the questions, and it comes from Tanya, and directed towards you, Mandy. So Tanya would like to hear your thoughts on the importance of childbirth and parenting education for young people at risk like Hayley and Lewis. What can that kind of add to their experience or early intervention and prevention focus?
Oh, it's a wonderful question because I think there's so many exciting opportunities in the antenatal classes to be really thinking about preparing parents for the experience not just of the birth but the post-birth. It is, pregnancy is this time of psychic flux. Everything gets thrown up into the air and there are all these hopes and expectations, and we know that parents start fantasising about their babies and start thinking about, I mean, some parents shut down from that. That's a really key warning sign. But it's a time when you actually can work with parents in a really exciting way as they're preparing for the birth of their babies. Some people would say that parents get very preoccupied with the birth and they can't think beyond the birth experience in the antenatal sort of time. But actually, I've found that's not necessarily the case. Often it is a time when they start thinking about how they're going to want to be as a parent beyond the birth experience. But also I think it's an exciting time to think about the birth itself is a time of incredible emotional dysregulation and arousal dysregulation. If you think about what it's like to actually deliver a baby, it's a time of high anxiety, high pain, high stress. So you're in that really high stress environment. So preparing for that is all about learning how to manage your feelings and your arousal state, which we know is what's going to be helpful post the birth. Just recently we had Nancy Bardak come out, and she does a program over in America called Mindful Birthing. And what she's found is teaching parents in the antenatal classes mindfulness practice in preparation for the birth actually makes a difference post-birth, so that when the baby's crying at 2 o'clock in the morning or when they're beginning to have some fractures in the couple relationship, or when the parent's basically under stress, which we know is a very stressful experience in those early months of parenting, they've got some skills that they learnt in the antenatal period that can actually sustain them in that postnatal time. So I do think the kind of antenatal period is a really untapped sort of time for working with parents, building their skills and capacity and their ability to reflect and make meaning of some of their own ghosts in the nursery. So they know the kind of things that might trip them up when they do have their baby come into the world.
That's a great answer. Thank you so much, Mandy. Really interesting. Jonathan, I'm going to throw to you now.
Oh, Dan, can I just add to that for 1 second?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Questions about parenting education. Certainly one of the things in the more sustained home visiting programs that really engages mum at times is the education about the development of the unborn baby, what's happening at different stages, gets them much more engaged with the image of how their baby's developing within them, you know, about nourishment, diet, all the kind of well-being things that really support their connection and what they can do for their baby and encourage their development. And it links very nicely with the importance of optimising child development postnatally, obviously physically and developmentally, but of course also emotionally and socially. So it's part of parent education that's not addressed in great depth, especially that, you know, in the first 9 months. But it's part in which, if you've got the time and space, mums really enjoy.
I was also thinking about it is, as you said, Nick, I think that great opportunity to build that relationship that could see you through the birth and post-birth. I think in the past we've tended to have these compartments of there's the health team that works antenatally and then there's the team that works postnatally. And we're sort of understanding, I think, that if we're going to really connect with a young woman and her partner like Hayley and Lewis, it might mean that we actually build those relationships that see you through that kind of time frame. And yes, imagining that baby growing inside, I think, is a fantastic thing for beginning to realise that this thing is happening and starting to think about the unborn baby and hope for the future.
A question for you, thanks Mandy, a question for you, Jonathan, from Katie and others, and it's a question we're getting asked often, is how do you work with someone like Hayley or Lewis, for that matter, where they feel or have had previous child protection notifications and may feel reluctant to disclose too much for fear of being judged or, of course, having an investigation?
That's a really important question, Dan. I'm not sure if I'm on or not.
You are.
Okay. So that's a really important question. I think a lot of the instances, and one of the reasons why there's a strong reference around the first 1,000 days with the CFARM program, is about getting in early so that you can create better circumstances for families at the antenatal stage. Because of that data that shows that where families and children are the subject of a notification, half of them do occur by the age of three. So if we can get in early to help turn that curve, so to speak. And for many, I referenced at one point working with people who've had out-of-home care experience. We know that in the same ways that I think the previous discussion was highlighting about, you know, different stages of care and the antenatal period and the postnatal period. One of the things that we often reflect on, and the reason why I think we feel so strongly about ensuring we've got really a good clinical picture of the circumstances, is that we don't just have a care plan for the antenatal period and a care plan for the postnatal period, but we've actually got a holistic assessment and screening of needs and risk, so that we can say, what are the needs for this family for the next, you know, 12, 18 months, 2 years, that we should be able to bring all of the services together in that way. So it was interesting hearing what Mandy was saying a little bit earlier about, you know, engaging reluctance, because sometimes engaging reluctance might also be a sign that we might not have actually hit the mark in responding to the needs in the way that they need to be met. So, for example, you know, we don't know a lot about Lewis's circumstances. We don't know much about his aspirations or his experience of growing up. We don't even really know much about what his employment or training status is. What we know about him is that he's making money ostensibly by selling drugs. We don't know whether then there's a piece of work to do with Lewis around, well, what are his aspirations for work and employment? What training might he be doing or that he might want to do? Similarly, what are the practical needs around financial support for baby when baby arrives? So there's a number of ways that I think that we can engage reluctance if we pick up on the right issues. In terms of when there are circumstances of having experienced child protection, we know already from Hayley, and I think we've got some indication from Lewis about, and it might be magical thinking on their behalf, but we know that there's some sense of an aspiration to want the best for baby. In Hayley's case, we've got some clear evidence, as Nick and Mandy have reflected on, in terms of, you know, she's looking after her brothers. That tells us something about her mothering and the fact that she's already been in a mothering role since she was 8 years old. So it is about how we find those points to engage. We're looking for the, if you like, as Mandy was talking about this, the vicious circles and the angel circles, you know, looking at the virtuous cycles, as I would say, that point to examples where they are clearly standing against what their history or their experience might tell them. And that might also demonstrate to them some reflective capacity around how their reluctance to speak with us might in fact be shown to be not so much of an issue for them as a concern as we truly manage to engage with them.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jonathan. Really interesting answer to a really complex issue. I'm just wondering, Nick or Mandy, in your experience, following on from what Jonathan had to say, have you got some quick comments or reflections on engaging parents who may have had previous child protection notifications or involvement, or are wary of service provision?
I mean, I think one of the things that I think a lot about is trying to communicate your good intentions for the family, and, you know, your sort of hope and determination to work with them so that they can, you know, sort of stay together as a family. I think, you know, so often families who've had contact with child protection, you know, become fearful and you know, think that the intention is as the aggressor that's going to come in and intrude and take away. And whereas if you can sort of be really clear that your intention is to support the family so that the family can stay together and that you're there to keep the baby safe, which is what the parent wants as well, so that you can kind of align yourself with their hopes as well, can be really helpful. Yeah, so I think it's somehow being able to talk about those things that are kind of the elephant in the room often, and sort of the unspeakable, somehow being able to raise those things, I think, can be quite useful early on.
Thanks a lot, Mandy.
I might comment on that briefly. I think on a number of things that Mandy and Jonathan are certainly ways to start to approach those issues. But that that fear that you know, parents have about authorities taking their babies runs unbelievably deep, especially in a context, you know, such as Hayley's might be, where she's feeling a bit hopeless about things and wants to hide from things. It's often in the context where people are feeling either guilty or overwhelmed that they have it's quite extraordinary the depth of their fear, a real fundamental fear about authorities stepping in because they're not good enough, or in Hayley's case, because she's an unfit mum. So it's often a very profound fear, and it's one worth commenting on pretty early in terms of engaging with someone like Hayley. And I think Jonathan's point about what's the sort of purpose of your role, what's the purpose of your engagement with this person, I guess, fortunate enough often, in a sense, separate myself from the child protection authorities and their activities, and say, I'm here as a therapist, and that sort of helps me keep me in a role of the best intentions or the good intentions that Mandy was talking about, or that I'm there to conduct a clinical assessment that's about, you know, your mental health status or something like that. So I try and use that as a way from separating myself as a distinct function, in a sense, from child protection ones. But it's also an issue, as you know, defined confidentiality. Part of when you talk about the importance of confidentiality in a relationship, that in fact there are some things about which you will not sustain confidentiality in the clinical relationship. So you're kind of making that as overt as you can, and you know that when you say that, you are sometimes encouraging some people not to reveal to you the full extent of their intense experiences or fears. So the only answer to some of those questions is they have to unfold over time, and sometimes there are some hard decisions and clinical judgments and professional judgments that have to be made around these issues.
James,
that's where supervision and backup and a team, that's where a team is quite critical in negotiating some of those difficulties.
Dan, can I just quickly build on what both Nick and Mandy have said? I mean, one of the reasons when I referenced restorative practice as an approach earlier, and also being clear about what our service role is and the limitations of that as well as the statutory obligations, I mean, I think these things can actually be engagement points. I mean, sometimes it is a matter of being able to name the bleeding obvious, you know, name the elephant in the room. But having difficult conversations, but with high support, and sometimes being quite transparent that, in our case, DCP may well be involved already, or they know that there's a high risk of them being involved. And so making that quite explicit can actually be a way that we can work with families. And again, going back to some of the comments I made about screening, is that preparedness to have those conversations that I think often has people feeling less anxious about the conversation. The prospect of having the conversation or dealing with those issues can be more anxiety provoking than actually having it when we get down to it. So how we do that with Hayley and Lewis becomes really important.
Yeah, thank you everybody, and thank you for those fantastic answers and some really stimulating conversation. I'll now invite our three panellists to make a brief final observation if they would like to. So I might start with you if we can, Jonathan.
Yeah, so I think for me, building support for Hayley and Lewis recognising what they've told us and being able to work with them becomes absolutely crucial. I think as Mandy has referenced earlier, this is a critical life transition for both Hayley and Lewis, and that brings with it challenges and opportunities. Having really robust case planning and solid clinical evidence by way of risk screening and assessment is a really important precursor to that, and from which good wraparound support will then flow.
Thanks, Jonathan. Mandy?
For me, I'll go back to just that original slide that I had up, really, of thinking about the infant and the parent and the regulation that happens through the relationship and the importance of how we might be able to come into that relationship as another and be able to support that spinning into more and more angel circles. That our role can be very much about supporting those positive interactions and positive moments and building more of those as we are a regulated person in that space influencing that system. So that's what I think about.
Thanks, Mandy. And Nick?
Yeah, I think we're struck by Hayley's strong sense for the future of her unborn child and then the years that will follow. So really the key theme is how to capitalise and use that opportunity. She's clearly exercised really strongly around how she negotiates the key relationships in her life and the impact of being pregnant and the impact of having a baby that will have on those key relationships. So she's got a lot of kind of relationship concerns and worries going on. And in terms of the first 1,000 years, the key task, I think, for a clinician is to look at how do we reduce, in a sense, her overall stress, because it's chronic or sort of, you know, toxic stress that's a big has a big impact, particularly over the first 1,000 years. You can see there's a variety of ways in which you could attempt to address that in the way that everyone's mentioned, in terms of relationship from a helping person, in terms of the real issues in her life, accommodation that she raises, all those sorts of issues. But that's the target. What's a way of, in a sense, mothering her, I think, around what's the way that protects her, preserves her capacities, builds her skills, so that she doesn't experience a maximum amount of stress. And that might mean dealing with some difficult issues along the way, as Jonathan's been talking about. And I guess that the clear-cut thing, you know, from a psychiatric angle is a potential risk for recurrence of depression, for example. So there's some real work to do around talking to her about how do you prevent, how do you intervene early, what do you do to promote maternal emotional health and well-being throughout the course of pregnancy and then delivery. And you can talk about that as other ways that, because they inevitably lead back to all these other ways that we've been talking about, the web of impacts that have an impact on her and her infant. So there's a lot to do, but the aspiration and the aim and the hopefulness that runs through her story is really the linchpin that you want to capitalise on.
Thank you, Nick, and to all our presenters. I'm sure everyone will agree that it's been a really great conversation and three really fantastic presentations tonight. So thank you to you all. Again, thank you to everyone who's been in the chat room tonight. I think that the questions that have come through have been fantastic and really helped tonight's session. So thank you to all of those who have been in the chat room, and especially to those of you who've posted questions. Thank you also to the wonderful Josh for facilitating the chat room. Just to let you know that for resources and further reading, other supporting resources associated with this webinar can be found in the supporting resources tab at the bottom of this screen. And just to let you know also that the case study of Hayley and Lewis that you saw in tonight's presentation can be found on www.emergingminds.com.au, and there are many of the e-learning resources that we supply, so please check those out. Also, a reminder to people that before you leave, please complete the exit survey and provide feedback. We're really keen to know what you thought of tonight's session and what you liked about it in any way that we can improve. Each participant will be sent a link to the online resources. And just a reminder also that the next webinar in the Emerging Minds webinar series is titled Engaging Parents with School-Aged Children. That will be held on Monday the 15th of October. We also have another couple of webinars as part of MHPM. And just to let you know that they are on Monday the 15th of October. There'll be a webinar on somatic symptom disorders on Tuesday the 23rd of October as well. So just to let you know, this webinar was co-produced by MHPN and Emerging Minds for the Emerging Minds National Workforce Centre for Child Mental Health Project. The NWCCMH is led by Emerging Minds and delivered in partnership with the Australian Institute of Family Studies, the Australian National University, the Parenting Research Centre, and the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. The NWCCMH is funded by the Australian Government Department of Health under the National Support for Children and Youth Mental Health Support Program. So that is it for tonight. It's been a really engaging and fantastic hour and a quarter. Once again, thank you to our practice experts for giving up your time. And before I close, I'd just like to acknowledge that the consumers and carers who have lived with mental illness in the past and those who continue to live with mental health in the present, we thank those of you who constantly provide us with support and advice and feedback, and we thank everyone who's participated so fully in tonight's session. Thank you very much.